Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton, a public health reporter here at KUNM. New Mexico could become the second state in the country to make both two-year and four-year college tuition-free for eligible students. In mid-September, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham announced her proposal to pay any tuition and fees not covered by the lottery scholarship or other grants, regardless of family income. How affordable is higher education for you and your family? How would this new scholarship change things? We're talking about the proposed New Mexico Opportunity Scholarship. And I want to welcome in the studio this morning, James Jimenez, Executive Director of New Mexico Voices for Children. Thanks for being here.
Appreciate that.
And Catherine Gutierrez, a PhD student in economics at UNM.
Hi.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. So I want to get first from both of you just initial reactions upon hearing this news recently. James?
You know, this was really kind of an amazing announcement, I think, on the part of our governor, and I want to thank her for having the foresight and to put out a really bold proposal. So I think overall, we at Voices for Children are really, really happy with the direction that the governor is talking about in making higher education much more affordable for New Mexico's families. As we know, the income statistics tell us that New Mexico families do not earn the highest wages in the nation, and therefore we need to make sure that we are providing every child in New Mexico the opportunity to achieve their potential. And one of the ways we do that is by these kinds of proposals.
And Catherine, anything to add on that?
I mean, New Mexico already has the lottery scholarship, and so this sort of builds on that and sort of adds to this New Mexican pride of, oh, we pay for everyone in New Mexico to go to higher education, to go to college in New Mexico. And I think that it's a really great initiative. Time will tell who it affects, and there will be a lot of interesting research that comes out of this, I think, that will inform the rest of the U.S. and higher education policy in general.
Mm-hmm. And I want to dig into a lot of those details about what could this proposal actually look like during this hour. But Catherine, I wanted to ask, because you received the lottery scholarship during your undergrad, right?
Yes.
What did that mean for your family back then? I mean, can you put yourself back in your 17 or 18-year-old mindset?
Yeah, I mean, it's really like you have something guaranteed. I mean, for a lot of students, I think pre-lottery, there was this, oh, I will go to college if I can afford it. But in my family, and myself and all of my cousins were of the age to be eligible for the lottery scholarship. And it really meant that college was like a sure thing for us. And we didn't really have to worry too much about the costs. I mean, we would still have to pay for room and board and food and things like that. But just having tuition paid for is a weight off for a lot of New Mexican families, not just mine.
You know, it was really important for my family, too. You know, I graduated from UNM long before the lottery scholarship was available. And when I graduated with a significant amount of debt that I incurred just to be able to live and to pay tuition and be able to go to college full time. It took me close to a decade to pay off all the student loans that I had taken out at that time. I contrast that with what the situation was like for my son, who was also a UNM grad. He graduated with $1,000 in student loan debt. That's it. And he paid it off. He paid it off within a year, right? So that's really, really amazing that, you know, we are moving in the right direction in terms of affordability for college. And I think that this proposal by the governor, I think, is absolutely a step in the right direction, making it even more affordable for families.
Well, I want to welcome also to the program this morning, Kate O'Neill, Cabinet Secretary for the New Mexico Higher Education Department, is on the line from Santa Fe. Is that right?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for being with us. So Governor Lujan Grisham apparently, you know, went straight to the New York Times. That's how it felt to a lot of us here, and announced this opportunity scholarship sort of as if it was a done deal, a plan. But the legislation isn't drafted yet. Is that right?
That's correct. Go ahead.
So a lot of details yet to be worked out. Are there any aspects of this program that seem non-negotiable for this administration? I mean, what's the basic architecture?
Yeah, I think the vision is very clear that it's access. The emphasis is on access for all New Mexicans, and what the governor is really signaling is that, you know, we've got to stand behind everybody who wants certificates, associates, bachelors. As James Jimenez said, it's really a game changer in terms of the kinds of opportunities and also the level of debt that folks come out of school with. And that's not only a personal decision for those students or a personal issue for them, but really it's an issue across society in terms of what we need here in New Mexico and what we want to encourage and invest in.
And so this Opportunity Scholarship was announced as what's known as a last dollar plan. What does that mean as far as how it would be decided what amount students would get from the Opportunity Scholarship?
Yeah, so as we look across the country, we've got about 20 plus states that do two-year college, that pay for two-year college, and we already in New Mexico have the lottery scholarship. And so the lottery scholarship is something that's considered a first dollar. And a lot of the two-year programs across the country are last dollar. And I think to explain that to folks, the gist of it is that if you are eligible for federal grants, such as the Pell, you would draw down those federal dollars first. If there are other state programs that you are eligible for, even private scholarships, you would use all of those that are available to you in terms of tuition and fees, and the New Mexico Opportunity Scholarship would close the gap, whatever is left over in terms of the tuition and fees for attendance. So that's why it's called a last dollar, because it basically tops off whatever the gap is between other aid and the cost of tuition and fees.
Thanks for that. And so, you know, you mentioned the Pell Grant, and that means that lower income students can likely get their tuition and fees paid for by those federal assistance programs. I mean, is this proposal really making college more accessible for students who most need the assistance? I'll put it that way now, but I think we're going to spend some time sort of debating that this hour.
I think so, and the reason being that, for, you know, more than half of our students in New Mexico are, you know, low income to the extent that they're Pell eligible. But as folks who are familiar with filling out the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, that form is something that we want to support people in filling out, and that's high school students right out of school and those also returning to school. And so, you know, part of this initiative will be partnering with the Public Education Department, with other groups, whether that's the Education Plan or AmeriCorps or other groups that work to support people in filling out those applications. But it really is, a whole system of support, not only about access and getting into school, but once you're in school, retaining, continuing, getting the kind of wraparound services or the kind of inputs that you need to continue. And that's true in two-year or in four-year programs.
And Hannah, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that even for middle-income families, particularly if you have more than one child in college at the same time, higher education is very expensive. And so I think what this does is it allows for families not to have to choose which child they want to or they can support or how much debt they're going to have to incur to provide higher education opportunities for more than one child. So it's, you know, we know that the benefits of a growing economy haven't been distributed evenly in New Mexico. And we've seen that middle and moderate income families really haven't been doing quite as well as those at the very top. And that's why I think proposals like this are so very important to really make higher education affordable, even for middle-income families.
And James, your organization, Voices for Children, put out a report in 2019 all about college affordability. Mm-hmm. And one of the policy recommendations that y'all put out was that the state not implement these implement last dollar scholarships. Why is that? And I mean, this seems to go directly against that.
Yeah, what we were concerned about and continue to be concerned about is New Mexico has not provided enough need-based aid. And what that means is that under the lottery scholarship, it doesn't really matter how much income your family has. You qualify. There's some really good things about that. On the other hand, it means that there's fewer dollars available for those who really don't have the means to pay for all of the cost of attendance at our colleges and universities. And so one of the things that we'll be looking for as this proposal gets debated in the legislature is whether or not there are ways of potentially applying a means test at the top end or providing other mechanisms to make sure that, Secretary O'Neill says, that the full cost of attendance is addressed. So it's not just tuition and fees. We know that there's a lot of other expenses that go along with that, living costs. You know, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that to the extent that a person cannot go to college full time, just lengthens the time that they are engaged in taking classes. And so a degree that at one time, if you could go full time, may have taken you 4 years, it's not uncommon to see it 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years or more. And even graduate degrees, which oftentimes can be just 2 or 3 year programs, can sometimes extend to 4 or 5 or 6 years, depending upon whether or not it's affordable to go full time.
And Catherine, you study the lottery scholarship, in part or among other things, and you've looked at what happens when the lottery scholarship, which is also, we should say, not need based. So it's the same type of scholarship as this opportunity scholarship would be in that way. But what have you learned about what happened when the lottery scholarship, say, tightened its eligibility requirements?
Yeah, so my results are not conclusive. I don't want to sound like this is conclusive, but yes, in 2014, there was a policy change that made it so that instead of taking 12 credit hours to be eligible for the lottery scholarship, you now needed to take 15. Instead of the lottery paying for 8 semesters after your first semester of college, now it pays for 7. And so what it looks like from my research, this is not conclusive again yet, but what it looks like is showing up from the data is that 8 semesters paid for to 7 semesters paid for is actually causing students to graduate more. And so we do see that there's an affordability thing here. So if students, if they can take a little bit longer and maybe ease their credit requirement load, their credit load, or if they can go to school for a little bit longer and, say, work, then they will do that. But if you have the lottery so that it pays for less, then they will take that into consideration, and it generally shortens time to degree at UNM is what we're seeing.
And what do you think about the fact that this opportunity scholarship would not be tied to family need, family income? I mean, what have you learned about that kind of program?
Yes, so this isn't my research, but two professors in my department, Dr. Ganderton and Dr. Binder, have done research on the implementation of the lottery back when it first started in the late 90s. And they did find that it seemed to increase enrollment mostly for higher income, lower achieving students. So perhaps students that would have gone out of state are now staying in New Mexico to complete their degrees here instead. There is some other research that shows that it helps time to degree for lower income students as well. So maybe makes it so that they don't have to work. This is from an as yet unpublished dissertation paper by Dr. Christopher Irwin, who just graduated from the Department of Economics. And so I think there's a lot to consider here, whether we want to think about time to degree. Student success is what they said in a lot of the news reports, and we'll have to decide what that means for us. But there is definitely an efficiency and an equity consideration here to see, like James said, is it a bigger bang for our buck to help lower income students and sort of have a means test at some range here? Or is it better to just have it be a low bar scholarship for all?
What does that mean, means test? We kind of glossed over it a minute ago.
Yeah, so it would mean that people over a certain income threshold would not be eligible for the scholarship. So we would basically, the FAFSA, I believe, asks for tax returns and other income-based paperwork to show your family income, and that qualifies you for federal grants and scholarships. And so there would be something like that, and that does increase a lot of the administrative costs to this scholarship. It's a lot of work to verify people's incomes.
Or it could be phased out, too. That would be another way of approaching means testing. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be a hard cutoff from, you know, full scholarship to $0 scholarship. But it could be phased out at certain income levels.
Like a sliding scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see. It is time to take a quick break. You can comment on Facebook about this New Mexico Opportunity Scholarship. We're at KUNM Radio. You can also tweet with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, another way to join in this conversation. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
Support comes from Heidi's Raspberry Farm. Heidi's Farm is open for their annual Saturday You Pick in Corrales. The farm is open 9 a.m. to noon every Saturday for fresh berry picking. More information at heidisraspberryfarm.com.
Support comes from the New Mexico Philharmonic. 6 p.m. Saturday the 5th, Paul Huang is soloist as the Popejoy Classics season begins with Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. Also Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4. Tickets at nmphil.org.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton, a reporter here at KUNM. Our focus today is the governor's new proposal to make college tuition-free for eligible resident students. We have a great panel of guests here. James Jimenez from NM Voices for Children, a PhD student, Catherine Gutierrez, and on the line, HED Cabinet Secretary Kate O'Neill. And I want to welcome also to the program Kimberly Blea on the line from Las Vegas, Dean of Students at New Mexico Highlands University. Good morning, Kimberly.
Good morning, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So what kinds of barriers do your students face in finishing college? I mean, whether it's financial barriers or other just things that make it hard to be successful or to complete.
New Mexico Highlands University is very proud to be an open access institution. We're committed to ensuring that our students have access to a quality education. With that, we see about 58% of our new freshmen are Pell eligible, and about 43% of them who complete the FAFSA are first generation. So given those two things in itself is an indication to us that our students do come from a low-income background, but in addition to that are navigating higher education for the first time. And so what that means for our students is their higher ed literacy, so to speak, is something that they need additional supports with. We really work with our students to ensure that, you know, they understand what different opportunities are available to them through scholarships, through student employment positions on campus. There's that financial aspect in which our students face. Many of them have to work as well as go to school full time. And so that's one example of barriers that many of our students here at Highlands face.
And how does the full cost of attendance compare to the cost of just tuition and fees? I mean, what are students, especially, you know, first generation and students who are low income? What's sort of like the full range of things that they're thinking about as far as making ends meet during school?
Sure. So Highland's current cost of attendance for an undergraduate in-state resident for the academic year is over $6,100. And in comparison to our room and board, that's about $7,800. When we look at that, oftentimes our students who are Pell eligible receive state opportunity grants as well as the lottery scholarship and different institutional scholarships available to them. They often have to leverage their financial aid award in order to cover not only the cost of tuition and fees, but also room and board costs. And then when there is still that gap left for them to pay, many of our students will work as student employees and have a payment plan with the university in which they are working and paying off their cost of attendance here at the university.
And one idea that our other guests were just kind of throwing around was that this opportunity scholarship, you know, could potentially have like a means test or a way to say, like, we're going to cover this tuition and fees for students up to a certain income level or on a sliding scale. What do you think about that kind of idea?
Well, first of all, I think that the Opportunity Scholarship is a very bold idea, and it's very exciting to be a New Mexican and to see this being proposed, especially for the benefit of our students and future generations of New Mexicans. When we look at a proposal mentioned by James or by Catherine, in which it's really focused on a potential sliding scale, I think that does support more equitable access to higher education, especially for students that we serve here at Highlands. It would help to be able to, cover some of those additional costs that currently they're having to figure out. If there's the possibility, and I know all the details still have to be worked out through the legislature, but if there is a possibility to look at it from a sliding scale fee approach and to cover true cost of attendance and not solely tuition and fees, I think that would greatly benefit the Highland students in particular, because we do see that they have a gap in what they have to come up with and pay. And because many of our students are low-income students and first generation, they would benefit tremendously from a sliding scale approach.
Obviously, we're speculating and we're going beyond what the governor has actually proposed. Secretary O'Neill, what do you think about that idea? I mean, this proposal, the Opportunity Scholarship, was sort of pitched as a regardless of family income. I mean, do you see any chance of that changing for the sake of like these equity concerns?
Yes, I think folks have pointed out, the legislation needs to be written, needs to be collaborated on among several groups. And I think the main emphasis that the governor is putting out there is access. And I think the patterns that we've seen in other states, we're looking at that research. I mean, you've heard about some research within New Mexico. We're also looking at what's working in other states. And I'll just say that as a former college president, the cost of attendance issues are extremely relevant. I think we know that childcare and transportation and some of those costs are very much a factor. And, you know, back at many of the colleges, those institutions are looking at collaborating with their communities on childcare and bus service. And, you know, we're looking at food insecurity issues and all those things that really impact students. But we have tribal colleges in New Mexico, research universities, community colleges, and there are a lot of different variables, whether those schools are urban or rural, based on the populations they serve, the cost of tuition and fees. So I think what you're seeing in this initiative from Governor Lujan Grisham is really to say, let's start here. Tuition and fees, let's make access a priority for all New Mexicans, and I think it's an exciting initiative.
And the University of New Mexico has been increasing its tuition in recent years, and we've also seen enrollment go down. I know that's not a trend across all of the 29 public institutions, but is that a major goal of this proposal, sort of stabilizing tuition and enrollment?
I think that the, we sometimes forget that until relatively recently, we were facing budget cuts, and across higher ed, there were many institutions that faced those cuts. And one of the things that they did in order to balance that out was to increase tuition. We are still among the lowest states in the country in terms of the rates of tuition that New Mexico higher ed institutions charge. But to get back to your point, I think the other states that we've seen navigate this well have some kind of an agreement among the scholarship providers, in this case the state and the institutions, setting certain parameters around tuition increases or rates thereof. And I think that there are ways to balance these considerations out, at the same time understanding that higher education has been cut over 30% in the last decade, really. And so, you know, we've really got to reverse that trend. This is one piece of what's needed in terms of this scholarship. I think higher ed institutions are also, you know, looking whether it's specific projects or the general funding formula. I think you'll see requests for additional funding because, indeed, this is going directly to the students, but also the institutions recognize that they need to be able to provide some of the wraparound services that we know are best practices in order to help students stay in college, whether that's tutoring, mentoring, switching to some of the degree mapping programs or some of the things that we've seen help increase the number of students who are retained. And the funding formula that I mentioned incentivizes graduation. So from the governor's point of view, the New Mexico Opportunity Scholarship really supports access. The funding formula supports graduation. And then we need to also focus on the retention piece and make sure that these issues related to not only academic success, but cost of attendance are addressed as well.
Hannah, one other thing I would add to what Secretary Neal said is that New Mexico has been amongst the highest or worst in the nation if you talk about reduction of support for higher education. And I think it's really been felt by the institutions. But one of the things that she didn't mention was that the higher education department itself has been dramatically pared down. And frankly, if this kind of scholarship program, which is going to be large and complex, is going to be managed effectively, Secretary O'Neill and the Higher Education Department needs to have the bodies on board to make sure it's being managed effectively and that they have good oversight of how the dollars are being used by all of the colleges and universities in the state.
Thanks for that point. And I want to mention, too, obviously, the lottery scholarship has been kind of plagued by management issues. It used to cover 100% of tuition. Now it's down around 60 or 65. Catherine, do you have ideas about that, about how the state should go about safeguarding this new, the financial sustainability of this new program?
Yeah, so the like you said, Hannah, the lottery scholarship has had some funding issues in recent years. And as a result, it has been cut down from 100 to about 60 or, as you said, 65%. I think that the main issue with the funding here is that it looks like the money is going to come from the general fund. Which the money in the general fund is mostly from oil and gas revenues. And we have seen a big boom in those recently, which has been great for the state of New Mexico and our initiatives here. But it's pretty unstable. And that is a concern. And so my concern with this is, again, an equity issue. If the program does not have enough money, then who will hurt? Who will they cut first? And to me, if it is going to be funded from the general fund, then we need to have a plan in place for when oil and gas revenues inevitably fall for the state and slash cause us to have to cut programs. Unfortunately, that when you have a state that is funded by oil and gas revenues like that, it's very, very unstable, and things like that happen often, as we've seen here in New Mexico. A more progressive income tax base could take care of some of the funding issues there, take out some of that volatility. But yeah, it remains to be seen who will be left behind if the scholarship, the Opportunity Scholarship, does have to take cuts in the way that the lottery scholarship has.
That's a point that I've been wondering about too, and we've seen a price tag on this proposal of $25 million to $35 million, and Secretary O'Neill, I'll ask you to break that down a little bit, but I'm wondering also, because of this messaging of tuition is now free for everyone, you know, it seems possible that especially folks who maybe are thinking about going back to college as adults or with families, you know, Secretary O'Neill, how do you estimate how many people are going to be coming to try to get a piece of this program? And what happens if you get way more students than planned? I mean, will there have to be a cap? Like, is your department thinking about these sort of difficult questions?
Yeah, I think we absolutely are. And I want to reassure folks that, you know, the basis of this is really understood, you know, in terms of where revenues would come from and any kind of volatility or need to sort of even things out and make sure that this is sustainable. So there are a number of things that various states have done. There are a number of things that folks need to consider. But just to reassure you, you know, this is not fully spelled out yet, but all of those issues are being carefully considered. And I think that the emphasis is on access and stability. So those are two of the main concerns. In terms of the 25 to 35 million price tag, I think that does factor in increases in student enrollment based on, you know, people who may be coming back to school as a result of this initiative. And I think the numbers are still being worked out in terms of, you know, if this, then that kind of decision tree or different modeling of the two-year sector, the four-year sector, urban, rural, different areas. We know that we have a great need for healthcare providers, for teachers, for social workers, for folks in STEM fields. But really, this is you know, designed to increase access, and we know that across the board for students in whatever field they choose to study. For every credit of higher education, their health outcomes improve. And there are other benefits, not just certificates and associates and bachelors, but, you know, certainly the more students you graduate, the more that affects your economic development as a state. And you know, it's complex, but I think this is really heading things in the right direction.
Why is now a good time to start this program from the general fund? I mean, we hear, you know, every time there's a big proposal about using oil and gas revenues for education, there's a lot of pushback, especially from, you know, more conservative lawmakers. I mean, why is this a good idea now, Secretary O'Neill?
I think that the one of the main reasons this is a good idea right now is because we look at the economic development of the state and across the board, from my position, I hear every single day about sectors that need more graduates, whether that's healthcare or the labs or the Forest Service. You know, the need is there, and certain parts of the state have greater need than others. The Permian Basin, I'm thinking of the rural areas, but we really now is the time to get people moving through the pipeline. And one of the things that we haven't talked about, I was at CNM last night. They're touring a new building that is their early college high school building and the Native American Community Academy there. And I talked to two high school students that will graduate not just with one associate's degree, but more than one. So what we are seeing is that students that are focused and motivated are really going to come out of high school, not only with their diploma, but with a certificate, a degree, and that's really the kind of head start that we want to support in terms of people in the pipeline. We have over 3,500 nursing openings in this state. We have, I think Sandia has said, over 1,500 openings, and so part of what you're seeing with various initiatives is really getting folks not only through high school, but getting folks to come back to school. And we want to incentivize both of those parts of our population across New Mexico.
You know, Hannah, there's a broader policy aspect to this that I'd like to mention, too, and that is that for over a decade now, we in New Mexico have tried this trickle-down economics approach to economic development where it indicates that if we just cut taxes enough for the wealthiest and for corporations, then somehow magic happens and all of a sudden everyone has a good, well-paying job. And we've seen that that's been a dismal failure over the past decade, and that what I see is a fundamentally different approach to economic development, and that is focused on investing in New Mexico's people. It's something that we at Voices have been talking about for many, many years. And that's why I think this approach that the governor has announced, in addition to the changes that are taking place in our K-12 system because of the Yossi Martinez lawsuit, and the focus on early education in a way that has been building over time that we have to give credit to the legislature and previous governors for also, really promises over the long run to provide the kind of educated, talented, skilled workforce that Secretary O'Neill was just talking about. We know that there are thousands of K-12 teacher vacancies that need to be filled. We also know the importance for children of seeing themselves, their culture, represented in the classroom itself. And so I think that the proposal that the governor has put on the table is really provocative in terms of its ability to potentially move us in that direction.
A lot of jobs out there, a lot of smart, motivated people ready to get trained up for those jobs. Let's go to a quick break. You can join in this show by commenting on our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or you can email us, letstalk@KUNM.org, anytime. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
Support comes from UNM Theater and Dance, presenting Conflama, a coming-of-age story about Girl, an African-American girl who thrives on legacy and family love as she builds her future. At Theater X through October 6th. Info at theater.unm.edu. Support comes from Outpost, presenting vocalist Kurt Elling, singing the songs of Louis Armstrong, Nat King Cole, and more. Thursday, October 17th at the Chemo Theater. Info at outpostspace.org.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. This morning, we're talking about higher education and the governor's plan to cover tuition and fees for in-state students. If you have thoughts about this, you can email letstalk@kunm.org or go on Twitter, tag us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We did get a Twitter comment from Kayla, who says she worked while she was in school and raising her son alone, and she had to quit classes at some point because she needed more hours at work. Very common story, I'm sure, in New Mexico. And Dr. Kimberly Blea on the line from New Mexico Highlands, I wanted to put that to you. I mean, do you hear stories like that from Highland students?
Absolutely, Hannah. Thank you. I hear this oftentimes with many of our students who are adult learners. Probably more than half of our students are non-traditional age students. And so oftentimes they are navigating being able to be parents and work oftentimes full-time as well as trying to go to school full-time because of the opportunities that higher education degree can afford them in access to a different type of career or maybe a promotion at their current place of employment. But many of our students have to be able to balance working full-time, be able to balance family, as well as being able to balance going to college and getting that degree. Sometimes some students may have to take part-time coursework rather than full-time. I am not clear if the Opportunity Scholarship specifically addresses that. But I think when we're looking at adult learners in particular, when they're returning to school, that may be something that may need to be considered by our policymakers as well when the details of the Opportunity Scholarship are worked out. Does it have to be a full-time status in order to be received, or is there the opportunity for part-time, and what does that look like? I think that's something that our adult learners would benefit from, or the flexibility from that.
And I'll put that to Higher Education Secretary Kate O'Neill. What do you think about part-time students or even less than part-time students, students who are maybe, you know, have a job and they're taking care of children and they're taking one or two classes a semester. I mean, will the Opportunity Scholarship be available to those folks?
Yes, and what I think is really, you know, being emphasized is anyone who's attending more than 6 credit hours per semester. That is the initial proposal here, and I think it's in recognition of just what you're talking about in terms of part-time. The lottery scholarship, as has been mentioned, really went from 12 to 15 student credit hours per semester, and the results are there in terms of time to degree and other things. But as I mentioned earlier, in terms of high school students coming straight through, there is certainly a recognition of full-time students, but we are also looking at returning or non-traditional students, those who are typically over 25, and typically those students need to work and have other responsibilities. And so our proposal includes anyone who's taking more than 6 credit hours in particular for the two-year sector.
Which, what would, Dr. Blea, would you give us like a sense of what 6 credit hours looks like for a student, like for those of us who it's been a little while since we've been in school?
Sure, Hannah. Do you mean like exactly?
Is that like 2 classes? How much? Sure. How much work is that? 6 credit hours?
Absolutely. So 6 credit hours is typically 2 courses. 12 credit hours is about 4 courses, and that's considered full-time status. And so whenever we have students who are taking 6 credit hours or are part-time, that is 2 courses.
Thanks for that. And so there are a lot of things to consider with eligibility for a scholarship like this. One thing we haven't quite touched on yet is like continuity. Dr. Blea, do you think it's important for students to be able to have the option to take time off either, you know, before, you know, either between high school and college or between semesters if they're an adult learner and be able to come back and still get that scholarship?
I think absolutely. As the Secretary has mentioned, the priority and the vision of the Opportunity Scholarship is access, right? And what does access look like for New Mexican students? It greatly varies based on personal circumstances, life situations. Not everybody is prepared to graduate from high school and go right into college. Some need time off. Many of our students have to work, you know, to help support family or their caretakers for older family members. And so with that, the direct need to enroll right upon high school graduation or the flexibility to not be required to do that, I think would greatly benefit Highland students. In addition to that, we see that many of our students face personal issues, whether that is the financial issues that come up, as I mentioned, or need to take care of older family members, or really just life happens and, you know, they're facing personal challenges or crises that, you know, they have to take some time off in order for them to be successful in the long run. I think that any flexibility that is given to this scholarship in the true spirit of being committed to access to higher education, I think that the opportunity for students to stop in and stop out would greatly ensure that access is guaranteed, just because of, you know, the nature of the students that we serve here at Highlands, but also overall in the state of New Mexico.
And we know that the demographics of college students are changing to be more what we think of as non-traditional, and we've talked about that a bit. Secretary O'Neill, what about, say, students who just, you know, need to add some skills for their job or to get that promotion and don't necessarily want to be in a degree or certificate program? Would the Opportunity Scholarship be available to those non-like programmatic students who are going to community college?
Yeah, what we are looking at this point are people who are in certificate or degree programs, and that is really the emphasis of this scholarship program. We are working closely with the Department of Workforce Solutions. There are paid internships and a variety of federal and state funds for specific training. And so for some of those shorter-term skills-based programs, I think there are other opportunities. And certainly, again, access is something that the governor is really emphasizing, and we are working in tandem with the Workforce Solutions Department to really address some of those issues. So, for instance, in the film industry, there are certain jobs, what they call above the line, below the line, and there are sort of competency-based metrics being put out there in terms of what somebody like Netflix is looking for. And so that's an example of something that might be, you know, shorter than a one-year certificate. So just to say, we are working very closely with the Public Ed Department, with the Workforce Solutions Department, and all sorts of public-private partnerships across the state. And whether that's, you know, allied technicians or welders or, you know, folks in, you know, again, various urban and rural areas, we're aware of the whole range of training that's needed.
And I think that's really important, because we've seen the sort of changing nature of work in America and really across the world, that, you know, the days of going to get a job at IBM and staying there for 25 or 30 years and then retiring, that kind of world almost doesn't exist anymore. And that's why I think it's so very important that we do provide support for people to build necessary skills in sort of non-traditional, non-degree programs to be able to effectively compete for the changing nature of work here in New Mexico.
And James or Catherine, you both spend a lot of time thinking and studying higher ed and what works, what doesn't. Do you have other thoughts about what eligibility requirements could really make this an equitable program or a more equitable program?
One concern that I've had is traditionally for these types of scholarships, there are GPA requirements. But we know that, say, you are working and you are taking care of a child or an older adult and you don't have as much time to study, and your GPA could suffer because of that. And so I think that there's a possibility for GPA requirements, or like we have been talking about, these credit hour requirements to sort of hurt non-traditional students or students who are more vulnerable and more likely to fall through the cracks here without support. And so, yeah, in terms of eligibility, I think that if we are going to implement some sort of GPA requirement or something like that, that it be really carefully considered, and that we really look at the research on who would be excluded from the program for things like that.
I did see a comment on, I think it was Facebook yesterday, someone saying, well, this is going to require a C average. Like, what do you think about that? Is a C average, is that too strict?
I mean, I think it really depends. Depending on the difficulty of the degree program, how many hours you are expected to spend outside of it. And additionally, I mean, I tended to have to spend more time on math classes. I say this as an economist now, which is funny. my degree is basically math. And less time on reading courses. And so depending on what your degree program is in and what your personal strengths are, that can really depend. I mean, a C average in math for somebody who has to work harder at math might be a really big achievement, whereas for somebody who's really good at math, it might not.
And Secretary O'Neill, are y'all coming up with any best practices as far as a GPA eligibility requirement from other states? What are you thinking for that?
Yeah, really good question. And we are doing a deep dive into what some other states have done. In terms of the C average, that is typical. I think, you know, in response to the comment, yes, certainly two of the areas that we see particularly challenging are math and English. And there are a variety of approaches to helping students take those courses early, helping them get the supports they need to get through them. there are a lot of innovations right now in terms of things like the flipped classroom, in terms of tutoring, and we know what some best practices are in terms of helping people who are particularly challenged in a couple of those core course areas. But as I mentioned, you know, that's part of what we mean in terms of retention. We don't just want to get people in the door without giving them the supports they need to get through. And so I think those are the kinds of details that we're going to be looking at very carefully.
One more comment from Twitter that I want to bring in. This is from Steve. He says he worked during his undergrad at the campus bookstore and that job was convenient and his bosses understood that school came first. He says he was super lucky to land that job and that it actually helped him do better in class. Dr. Blaya, can you talk a little bit about the importance of on-campus jobs being supportive in that way and what other types of support help Highland students get through college successfully?
Absolutely. Thank you. So here at Highlands, we're very proud that we have prioritized providing student employment positions through our budget for students. Part of that is we recognize many of our students have to work while going to school. And one of the great benefits of being able to have a student employment position on campus is we look back to what the retention literature suggests. When a student feels connected to a campus, to an institution, to people on the campus, there's a sense of belonging. The likelihood that they're retained and persist increases. It's at a greater rate. So for one, we see our prioritizing student employment as a retention strategy in which students have that financial support that they need, but also that they have that social connectedness and that sense of belonging on our campus. In addition to that, here at Highlands, we've implemented new this academic year, a student success coaching model. And there's national examples. One in particular is Georgia State University.
Just about 15 seconds left.
Very successful at this. And so we've implemented that. But basically, we're looking at supporting the holistic well-being of our students in every aspect and domain. We have supplemental instruction. We have tutoring. We have anything you can think of to support the student academically, but also in the personal well-being area as well.
All right. We are out of time for today. Thank you so much to our guests, Kimberly Blaya up in Las Vegas at Highlands, Secretary Kate O'Neill at HED, Catherine Gutierrez and James Jimenez. And thank you to those who commented via Twitter. If you missed part of today's show, you can listen on KUNM.org or subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This conversation about higher education does not have to end here. Comment on our Facebook page, talk to us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. Our engineer is Marino Spencer, Taylor Velasquez, and Bryce Dix helped with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.